You are listening to Art Not Science, presented by the Physics Room Contemporary Art Space, a monthly podcast of artist talks, panel discussions, and other events.
Tēnā tātou katoa. Nō mai hoki mai ki tēnei kaupapa kōrero o The Physics Room. Nō mai, whakarongo mai, whakatau mai. My name is Abby Kinane and I'm the director of The Physics Room, a contemporary art space dedicated to developing and promoting contemporary art and critical discourse in Aotearoa. Based in central Ōtautahi since 1996, we assist artists with resources and opportunities to enable creative and professional development and work to support the acknowledgement and understanding of contemporary art among New Zealanders. Our goal is to actively seek links between the arts and other areas of cultural production, and to involve art as a contributing voice in wider intellectual, social, and political debate.
Kia ora tātou. My name is Amy Wang, and I'm the curator at the Physics Room, and this is episode 47 of Art Not Science. In this episode, we'll be sharing a recent artist talk with Yona Lee. Yona's exhibition, Objects in Practice, is currently on at the Physics Room until the 11th of June. Objects in Practice presents three new sculptures. Over the past 7 years, Yona has refined a vocabulary of stainless steel tubing supporting everyday items. These items, deployed in carefully orchestrated installations, evoke the itinerant and fugitive experiences of contemporary life by collaging together fragments of urban and domestic environments. Objects in Practice is a series of material gestures that prompt us to consider the role of iteration or rehearsal within artistic practice. Further, Yona's repertoire of actions, built up over time, provides a means to express the habitual and intricate drama of our everyday lives. Yona is based in Tāmaki Makaurau, Auckland. Yona's work has recently been the subject of solo exhibitions, including an arrangement for 5 rooms at Auckland Art Gallery, Toyo Tāmaki, In Transit, Choose a Network, at the Art Gallery of New South Wales, Sydney, In Transit at City Gallery, Wellington, and Succession at Dunedin Public Art Gallery. She has featured in large-scale thematic exhibitions, including the Busan Biennale in South Korea in 2020, the 15th Lyon Biennale of Contemporary Art in France in 2019, and the Changwon Sculpture Biennale, South Korea in 2016. Now let's hear from Yona. Would you like to begin by describing your own practice, maybe touching on one or two ideas?
I've been working on mostly immersive, site-specific installations, and over the past 7 years, and some of these kind of domestic scale been sort of developed over the more recently. So the works that you've seen here, the latest iteration, the more like the domestic scale and freestanding sculptures. And some of the ideas that I've been exploring are the development, the modernization of transport system and the impact of that on our perception on time and space. And also like I was trained as a cellist when I was a bit younger. So I bring a lot of like musical knowledge into making work and exhibition making and approach to space.
So these two sort of ideas of travel or transit and music have been really informative for your practice. And I know that in 2016, you undertook 2 residencies back to back in Seoul, which were also really important for you developing your practice. And also in terms of the materials that you have been using. Can you talk a bit about this and maybe how you came to use steel tubes in your work?
So I remember like I took a residency in Seoul in 2016, and the residency was sort of situated in like sort of in the central Seoul, but it was sort of like there was a big park, and it was so in order to actually connect to other parts of Seoul took actually a long time. It was like involved walking and taking a bus, and then you get to one of the subway train stations that you can connect to other places. So I ended up spending like a lot of time like traveling, and when you're in the sort of city, you're excited, you want to do so much, but then you're so restricted with the body and like the how much you can do. So I ended up spending a lot of time on walking, on a taxi and bus and subway, and then we looked at the streetscape of Seoul And I came to realize that, and I saw all these stainless structures that are used everywhere, such as like you can see the subway handles, they're hung on these poles, and bus buzzer on these poles, and also in like domestic spaces, the towel rail and like handrails and to like various stands. And then I could see how I could kind of work with them. Also, remember at the time, I was sort of in a relatively like new city, so I had to find a new way of like working, and sort of finding something like universal material, kind of easy to fabricate. And so all these like practical reasons, artist reasons, came to use these materials.
Yeah, and prior to that, you were using steel rods, weren't you?
And they were very like handmade with like hand machines, and I didn't have that set up, so I had to find an alternative way of like developing my practice at the time.
I've noticed throughout your work, you've always incorporated everyday objects that reference urban and domestic environments. And in your current show, you've introduced yoga mats or exercise mats, which is a new addition to your material vocabulary, I guess you could say. Can you talk a bit about your choice in objects? Like, what is your relationship to these objects?
So for me, these objects are like instruments that have different texture, tone of sound, or like ingredients where you can juxtapose into making different way you cook and different dishes. And for me, these objects kind of like signify and a way to bring different spaces in together. And when we really think about our built environment and these kind of like everyday objects that we use, they belong to specific space. Like, for example, we have bed in our bedroom, or there's a lantern in park, or like bus handles in a bus. So there's a specific, they belong to specific spaces, places. And for me, these tubular structures is a way to kind of bring these spaces together. Like, I guess to talk about this kind of collapse of like time and space, and due to like technology and its development, and we sort of kind of experienced that peak during COVID where everything sort of collapsed into like one space. And also like this tubular structure, they're very cold, they're very industrial material, and they're very associated with masculine, especially if you look at the history of sculpture. And so for me, these like objects kind of like balance that out and kind of like bring emotions, or like softens that kind of coldness of the tubular forms and material. Oh, and also they sort of bring color to my work as well.
Is that sort of the reason why you've chosen to incorporate these yoga mats?
The yoga mat was sort of a way to kind of respond to the wooden floor in this space. And they were just sort of like a perfect object because they're kind of like a plinth, but they're not really plinth. And they bring out color. So it's sort of like mediates between kind of that wooden floor and the work. And yoga mat is, you know, it's quite strongly associated with activity on the human body. So having like a sculpture static, you know, it doesn't move, and it's static on object. And often people would suggest me, because I bring like music knowledge into my making, often it's, oh, why don't you like look into kinetic or having something moving in your work? And I sort of always felt against that idea. For me, this kind of yoga mat somehow let the sculpture be quite static, but still bring an idea of activity or movement, or and as if they're like a living entity.
They definitely remind me of small creatures or something that's doing some kind of exercise in the space. I wanted to ask you, the other day you talked about the objects that you selected as having this kind of like normcore aesthetic. And you talk about them being from very like specific places from our environment, but they're also very generic objects. Do you want to talk a bit about that?
Yes, it was quite intentional to use objects that are quite normcore, and they're cheap, and they're really like objects that we're familiar with, and I was quite conscious of not having any loaded meaning to these objects, so that people can bring their own memory or their own association or their own narrative in relation to these objects.
They are from specific environments, but they're not, say, from your own, not from your home, any specific experience. Yeah. So obviously the works in objects and practice are different from your large-scale installations. They are small freestanding sculptures. But can you describe what they are for you and maybe how they fit in or diverge from your previous investigations?
For me, these lines and forms, they come from my understanding of how sound vibrates the space and activates the space, and there's a sense of line traveling space, and which is sort of extended to people moving through space. So these tubular forms and these linear lines, they can just keep going and expand into more architectural scale. That can be a building scale, and it can also be quite small and be an object, or more a conventional idea of painting or sculpture scale. So for me, these smaller objects are a DNA of a larger installations, and they are different formats, and because they have different format, they offer different things, and they how they occupy the space and how the audience, the relationship, and how audience might interact with it is quite different. And they, especially these freestandings, are very human scale or smaller, and they're quite low on the ground. So when you sort of my intention was that one of your walks to the work, and it sort of kind of evokes the sort of crouching down and kind of lowering your one's body to kind of engage with the work. And when you really think about it, when a person does that, it's when you engage with a child or an animal or a dog, and a being that is vulnerable. And I think that relationship is quite interesting. And then compared to more immersive environment, it's more walking in, and it's a built environment where you invite to interact and sort of spend time. This is more definitely more kind of personal, intimate experience.
You are listening to Art Not Science, presented by the Physics Room Contemporary Art Space.
For me, these sculptures do seem to be part of a family or a series of works. So if I think back to one of my earliest encounters with your work, that was the show you did at Te Tuhi, and that felt really significant in the sense that it was the first time that you got to test out your work in such a large space. And there are a lot of materials and objects that seem to reoccur as motifs across your practice. For me, it feels like this idea of repetition or iteration isn't just important to this exhibition, but to your practice. And I wondered if that was something that resonated with you at all.
The idea of iteration is really important. And I kind of often reference this quote by this really famous violinist. It's a Perman. He's a Jewish violinist, and he's also a teacher. So when you listen to his interviews, he sort of talks in a very helpful way. So in one of the interviews, he talks about, he compares a jazz musician to a classical musician, and when they improvise and how they are different. He talks about how, for example, a jazz musician performs a piece several times, and every time they sound completely different because they actually play different notes, different rhythm, different ways. So even though it's the same piece of music, every time the jazz musician perform, it sounds completely different. And he says for a classical musician, the improvisation is different. It's the improvisation is quite subtle. So when you think about classical musicians, their role is to respect the composer's intention as much as it can, and then also be able to interpret their own way. So every time they improvise, it's about the subtle difference, such as how you breathe each performance, or the tonal change, or the way you feel at the time about the certain phrase. So it's about very subtle changes that if you don't really listen carefully, you can't really notice a difference. I find that practice really fascinating because I find that it's very relevant to everyday living, because we have this kind of routine that we repeat every day. And sometimes we have some exciting things happening, but most of the times it's just going through the daily things, going to work and waking up and like traveling and driving or things like that. So I think that, and he also talks about the importance of being fresh about each performance. Can you imagine him like performing like a piece of music hundreds of times over the span of his career? And it's about the magic is in the freshness and being able to keep that up. And I find that quite fascinating. So so when I approach exhibition making, it may not be different materials. It may not be a fresh new ideas, but it's about that freshness of iterativeness and performativeness and how you make the space quite fresh, as well as seeing the work in a different ways.
I wondered if I could ask a bit about how you make these works then, and even how you plan or execute your works, and maybe thinking about that idea of iteration or rehearsal.
So when I first make these works, I use digital programs such as Sketch and Blender, and then I produce like production drawings, and I'm quite heavily involved in the production of these works. Depends on the scale of each project. Sometimes I build a small team with like a welder, an assistant. For some of these smaller scales, I often make them myself, and I learn these skills from each project, from the people that I've worked with. And I really enjoy making because I get a full control of like budget or like the time frame, but also like, you know, how these tubular forms, they're either horizontal or like vertical. So there's something about, and when you heat the steel, they kind of react, you can't really, on unexpected ways, it's very organic in the making process, even though they're very industrially made, and they have the kind of association of like manufacture, like mass produced materials, but the way they're made, they're very organic, and I find straightening them, like leveling these lines and like plumb with levels, and that process very similar to when I play the cello, because if you think about these string instruments, you find the notes and there's a gradient of like notes, and unlike like a piano or with its tune, so you just press the button, it's like C. But in string instrument, you have to like hit the right notes. And so there's something about that similarities between finding the right notes versus like having the lines quite straight. And I kind of enjoy that process a lot.
I wanted to ask about the viewer's experience of the work. I know you already talked a bit about that before, but is there a kind of encounter that you're envisioning with your large-scale installations? You're sort of creating these mazes that people could pass through and to linger at these tables or beds, whereas here that experience is quite different. Can you maybe talk a bit about how that's changed with these works, or maybe if this is a continuation of that?
For the like larger installation, I often have like a bed, like a bunk bed, tables and chairs where people can take a nap or socialize and actually spend time in these exhibitions, and rather than just sort of being there, like look at the work. And often these strategies employed to kind of challenge the way we've been trained or educated to behave in certain ways in museum context. And it was quite interesting to see how the different contexts of, like, whether it's a commercial gallery or a public museum or a project space, people's behavior sort of changed according to towards my work, according to these different spaces. And I think with the physics room, these works are not, it does a different, I guess, offer a different way of, like, occupying the space. And I think maybe the yoga mat is offering something else. Yeah, we'll see next month.
In an earlier conversation, you sort of mentioned, you were sort of drawing a parallel between your work and your musical training and how you were interested, well, as a musician, to interpret the composer's intent or the sort of like emotional narrative of a composition. And I think there's something quite interesting happening in these works because they do take on quite a figurative character or an anthropomorphic quality. And it feels, they're quite strange to me. And I wondered if that was something you'd ever thought about, like maybe the element of humour or the comedic quality of these works.
I think that element has always been in my work from very early on. And I think it's probably to do with how these objects are like formally attached to these poles and they have like a head quality to it. And I think that's a partial reason. And because they're so familiar objects and when you kind of like change or subvert that, I think the humor or like uncanniness like comes from that. And also I think when they are in more like freestanding, which is very human-like and the scale of human, and that I think that kind of accentuates that element more than so as the bigger installations. And I think I do, when I sort of like plan these works, and I think I do get quite, I think it's quite intentional. I think I get quite, in order to kind of make them quite uncanny in some ways, and by maybe the way they are held against like gravity or so on.
You are listening to Art Not Science, presented by the Physics Room Contemporary Art Space.
Perhaps we could open the conversation up to questions from the audience.
There's an element handmade in the tube structures, but they also look, I guess, very professional.
I think that question might touch on my interest in looking at in the history of Bauhaus and this kind of like modernist tradition. And there's something quite fascinating about simplifying or for mass production, and I think at the time that was necessary because of the increase of like people living in the city and so on, but it's very impersonal, and I think that's to do with like technology as well. Technology offers so much good things, but at the same time not so good things. And for me, they sort of like the handmadeness or the kind of emotional or, and I think that element come from like the classical training. And when you think about this classical music, it's all about emotion and all these industrial materials. And like, when you think about it, they're quite male and very masculine and very industrial cold. And for me, this sort of like the handmadeness or these objects, this kind of like, everyday objects, the introduction of them is a way, I think it's to do with the bringing the classic, the more emotional side to it and kind of like maybe challenge or like see these forms in maybe in different ways.
Yeah, Shemaine?
In Australia, and then what's the
mop? So the mop is an important object for me. And they do a lot of things for my work. And one thing is that often in in public spaces or like galleries, we don't often appreciate cleaning, the labor of cleaning. And in history, often it's been often associated with a female, a job they associate for female. And for me, these mops, they offer very humor and they're quite funny objects. But it's also to do with, you know, cleaning has been quite accentuated during especially COVID. And I wanted to kind of like acknowledge that through work. But on top of it, it's quite fun working with a mop. And I think it's doing a lot of things. It looks like a head with a hair and it's very unusual object.
Yeah. In contrast to the hardness of the steel or the lines
and the fabric, and it formally the softens of tubular forms and so on and so on. And also the pole is very often used for activities like painting the wall or like vacuuming the floor, like the mopping the floor. So it's very supporting material for the body to do these activities. So it's quite friendly in a way. I can't imagine like painting the wall without the pole. Can you imagine how laborious that process going to be without that simple invention?
My question is around you made a good statement about hardware vulnerability. Mm. You say it's like your vulnerability.
Yeah, definitely, because we see like these everywhere in the infrastructure of like the city especially. And my approach to using this material is to like humanize in a way, like, so it's not necessarily just a character to it. And I think even like with this more freestanding sculptures kind of like accentuate that even more than these like more larger scale ones. And they are quite domestic in scale. And I think that kind of like kind of develop more intimate relationship to these objects.
You spoke about your musical. What's your writing relationship with
That's a really good question, because when I first made a public exhibition after graduation, I worked with this curator, Meredith. She was the assistant curator at the Gobert Bruce Dark Gallery. And then when she saw my work in my graduation, she said, oh, I wonder what these might sound like. And I think maybe it's to do with the kind of tubular, like flute or these brass instruments where the air traveling through and making sound. And I often pick these sounds when I actually make them, and they actually make really interesting sound. Like they actually literally make sound when I was making, like, yeah, and working with like these little tools that sort of bring a lot of air, and it sort of actually make like a pitch in the tubular. And I think there are many artists actually work literally with sound, with making DIY instruments with these. But I think the making sound with these tubular forms, they have very similarities when, say, you make a phrase with playing the music. And maybe I think it's to do with making the right sound to maximize the vibration. So, you know, there's always this difference between making a good sound and a bad sound. And what is that difference? It's to do with letting the instrument speak, not forcing it. And I think that approach is quite similar when I work with the space. These lines had to be in certain ways to activate the space in the right way, or in a good way, I don't know, like to bring the characteristics of the space. So I think there's very similarities, not quite a literal sense, but yeah, it's a really interesting question.
I think it's really interesting when we're talking about sort of anthropomorphizing steel, because when I look at the sculptures, I see like the clock faces outwards and the lamps face into each other, and it gives them sort of like a correct bodily orientation, and I think that's interesting, because, you know, when I look at the clock, I feel weird if I'm not like looking it in the eyes, and it gives the sort of very freeform, almost abstracted sculptures a very like linear and specific way to look at them. And I was wondering, like, is that potential, if you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, or maybe the way that the works are asking us to approach it. So you were sort of talking about the clock face asking, you know, like the viewer to sort of approach it face to face. Is that what you mean?
Yeah. No, I think that's really interesting to hear the experience of engaging with the work, and that's quite helpful for me to like appreciate and see it in different ways. I haven't really thought about that in the context, but because they're quite anthropomorphic when we encounter like a human being or an animal, like a living being, we do like to have an eye contact, and these don't. And I think that opens up ways of like interacting with these creatures in a more abstract way.
You know, it's a really interesting observation to make. Any other partai or comments? Yes, sir? Yeah.
Do you have a
I did, but twice. So one was in that exhibition that I mentioned with Meredith in the first exhibition. So as a closing event, she had this idea of like me performing cello in front of the work. And I remember at the time, like, you know, I'm just fresh out of art school. I want to impress this curator who gave me the first exhibition. And I want to do so much. And so at the time, I couldn't really figure out if conceptually that was the right thing to do for the work. But I did it anyways. And we didn't record it, thankfully, so you can't really find it online. But it was an amazing experience because if you remember in New Plymouth, there's the clock ring, the rings every like 15 minutes, and it hit 12 o'clock while I was playing. So it rang, it hit the like longest, the bell, and there was a traffic passing behind me while I was playing. And that was a really important exhibition because I think at the time I was not confident enough to acknowledge the kind of musical side of me to come with the work. And I think after the exhibition that really came together and I think I became quite confident using these linear lines, and they are like mine, like my sound. They're not like just a reference to other sculptural histories in the past. And the second performance was quite soon after that. I did this installation in mezzanine space, art space. And it was like a chamber, like a sound chamber. And I had like these lines, rod, a patch from floor to the ground, and used a cello bow to kind of vibrate the work. And it actually like vibrated the whole building. So it was kind of like important exhibition I made quite early on with sound, but I tried to bring some sound back into my work after, and it's still ongoing. And I can imagine doing something with tubular forms and sound, but probably want to do it when it's the right time and right place. Some sort of like saving it. But I do let some sound come through the work through these objects. Like I often have like a bus buzzer. So all these like sound that's made from these objects, I sort of like, or the kinetic, let the objects sort of bring them. But I haven't really like imposed any sort of on top of that.
That was Yona Lee talking about her current exhibition, Objects in Practice, at the Physics Room. Objects in Practice runs until the 11th of June, and the gallery is located on the ground floor at 301 Montreal Street, entrance via Market Square car park. For Melbourne listeners, we'll be visiting the Melbourne Art Book Fair from the 19th to the 21st of May, alongside Enjoy Contemporary Art Gallery and NAM-based UN Projects, where we will be presenting a range of recent TPR publications, as well as a selection of books by Five Ever, Arte Journal of Māori Art, Medium Duty, and Object Space. On Saturday, the 20th of May, Publications and Writing Coordinator Arissa Keane will be joining Claire Harris from Enjoy, Katie Kerr from Gloria Books, Tana Mitchell from Akin Studio, and Lee Richardson from Hot Lunch for a panel discussion on art publishing in Aotearoa, New Zealand. Despite the huge costs of printing and even bigger challenges of distribution, Alternative publishing in Aotearoa is thriving. Drawing on the stories and essays from Dwelling in the Margins, Art Publishing in Aotearoa, published by Gloria Books, the speakers will discuss the drive to publish and what challenges and opportunities affect the community. The talk will be at 3 p.m. at the National Gallery of Victoria, South Bank, Melbourne. Thank you for listening. Tune in next month on Friday, the 16th of June at 8 p.m. for our next episode of Art Not Science. Mā te wā.
The Physics Room is generously supported by Creative New Zealand, the Christchurch City Council, the Rata Foundation, Three Boys Brewery, Scientech, and the Crater Rim.